Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
This is a big joke. This is a circus. The judge that's appointed, he appointed her. What do you think is going to happen?
I've supported President Trump since he was a candidate, since he began his candidacy in 2015. I've been supporting him in different ways. We still have a constitution in this country and everyone has rights.
It is a place few would have believed would be possible in America. A former U.S. president arrested and arraigned on federal criminal charges. But here we are. In the middle of a presidential campaign, Donald Trump pleading not guilty to 37 counts related to the alleged mishandling of classified documents. Tonight, we look at the law, the politics, and the moment. My guests are Eva McKend, national politics reporter for CNN, Raynard Jackson, political analyst and Republican strategist, and attorney William Lightfoot, and also you, the listener. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Eva, good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Nice to be with you.
Renard, good to talk to you again, man. It's been a while.
Thank you, Harold. Good to talk to you as well. And Eva, good evening to you.
And Attorney Lightfoot, good to have you back on the program as well.
Thank you very much.
Let me start with you, Attorney Lightfoot. From a legal perspective, and you have a 360-degree point of view when it comes to the law and politics, what did you observe today?
Well, two things. Number one, that Mr. Trump is certainly defiant and is going to fight this. He's not going to plead guilty to any of these charges. Even though it may appear from the indictment he is guilty on the facts. I think that he has a legal defense if you look at how we separate his behavior from Hillary Clinton, Vice President Pence, or even the current President Biden. So I was struck, one, by the strength of his legal defense and what he intends to do, and then secondly, I think the politics of this and how he's using this to further advance his presidential career.
Can you give me kind of a thumbnail sketch of exactly why these charges are so serious? I've read the indictment at 49 pages. It is like something out of a legal drama and not difficult to understand.
That's true. But what we do not know is the harm that actually has occurred, or we don't even know the potential for the extent of the harm, because we don't know exactly what these documents are. Other than, we know these are documents that relate to the highest level of our national security, our nuclear weapons, our plans to defend our country in case we have a war, such as with China or with Russia. Our vulnerabilities about what another country could do when attacking us. So when you look at this indictment, it's very serious in that the documents that are alleged that Mr. Trump intentionally kept have a risk of causing harm to our country and the people who live here. But we don't know what all those documents are, so we don't know the full extent of the harm.
You know, Eva, there obviously is the law. But talk to us about the politics. We've seen over the past couple of days that some key Republicans on Capitol Hill have been doing an ease back into not defending the former president.
Reflexively, the response was just to rally behind him. I think the larger argument that they want to make is that this is an example of how the Democrats are weaponizing our agencies. But as the allegations come into focus, it really comes into conflict with a lot of issues that Republicans have historically championed. That's the problem. Republicans have always taken a political position to take our national security, our defense, really seriously. And the allegations here are in conflict with that. I mean, some of what was alleged to been in the former president's possession were the nuclear weaponry of our country, nuclear capabilities of a foreign country. Constantly, one of the main issues you hear Republicans talking about is the threat of China. And you have the former president holding these documents. So that is why we see them doing the this delicate dance. You are seeing cracks in the dam here. We heard from Nebraska's Congressman Don Bacon today, and he's like, listen, the emperor has no clothes. I cannot defend this.
Speaking of not defending it, you know, Reynard, we saw last night on CNN, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, obviously wanting the top job at the White House, throwing some serious political punches at the former president. And I'm talking about some haymakers, some uppercuts, and some serious political jabs. But we've also seen, for example, Nikki Haley starting to back off of her defense of the former president. We've seen Graham in South Carolina do the same. To what do you attribute this apparent change?
Well, number one, I'm not seeing much of a change, Harold, to be very candid with you, number one. And I would like to separate the issue of this Trump trial, the I-95 corridor, to New York, inside the Beltway people, they are obsessed with every minutia of the campaign, of this legal situation with Trump. But the outside the I-95 corridor, the average American, the average voter, the only thing they're saying, if you're a Democrat, you're saying Trump is guilty as heck. If you are a Republican or an independent, what you're saying is Trump represents us. Trump represents the everyday male. And what you're going to see happen, Harold, mark my word on this, especially within the black community, the reason this is going to make black folks resonate with Trump is a lot of blacks have family members, if not personal experience, being mistreated by the justice system. There's no doubt about it that the Democrats are piling on politically with Trump, less so than the legal side. I think legally, this is the strongest exposure Trump has of all the legal activity going on in Georgia, New York. This is the strongest, but even that is weak. What people got to understand is the American people relate to what Trump is going to, and I think it's going to backfire on the Democrats.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the arrest and the arraignment of former President Donald Trump, the law, the politics, and the historic moment. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Lines are open again at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Okay, Reynard, let me ask you this piece then. After, and I'm assuming you did read the indictment when it was released last week, what do you think of the fact that he had all of these boxes and, of course, did not want to give them back? Certainly a significant difference from the Biden case still under investigation, the Pence case where there are no charges being brought. Reynard.
Yes. Yes. Well, here's what we do know. Trump had the boxes at Mar-a-Lago. There's no dispute on that. Did he have the legal authority to possess those boxes? That's what we don't know. And to me, that's going to be the center of this whole trial in Miami. Did he have the legal authority to have the documents, number one? Number two, were these the former president's personal records, or were they the National Archives record? We don't know that yet. So to me, those are the two questions that have yet to be answered and then were not fleshed out in the indictment.
But you have him allegedly on tape, so we haven't heard the audio, but prosecutors have outlined verbatim the audio that they have in their possession. And I would really be surprised if they didn't actually have that audio verbatim, if they put it in the indictment, of him saying, telling people at Mar-a-Lago that he knows that he doesn't have this is classified material and that he didn't declassify it as president. So he's almost, it sounds like they have him on tape admitting to wrongdoing here. So I don't know how you defend that.
No, Eva, that's not true. We allegedly, of course, none of us have heard this tape, and you are more generous than I am, given the Justice Department the benefit of the doubt. I don't presuppose that they're telling us the truth, number one. Even with the tape, I want to hear the whole thing unedited, because this Justice Department is notorious for putting the face they want on any evidence. So that's number two. Then finally, the mere fact that the president said, I have documents that are secret, number one, we don't know that he flashed the documents in front of him, because this is audio tape, not videotape. Number one. Number two, he could have flashed a piece of paper and had the face of the paper the back side of the paper, so they can't see anything. So there's a whole lot of ambiguity in that. And if the prosecutors are going to base their case on that audio tape, then he'll get acquitted on every charge.
Attorney Lightfoot, in the pantheon of political problems, and you've been around, you've seen them, you were on the D.C. Council when Marion Barry was mayor, you were certainly around during the Watergate era. Where do you think this ranks when we talk about the historic moment?
Well, it certainly is an historic moment. In terms of politics, you know, I'm not sure this was unintentional on the part of Trump in the sense that whether or not he gained this out as a political maneuver. We know that he intentionally took the documents. We know that he intentionally kept the documents. Why did he do that? Maybe he thought he would do something like this and it would fire up his base, which it has. He collects more money now than every time he gets indicted or there's some kind of criminal charge, he raises even more money. And his competitors who are trying to beat him, they run to his defense and support him. Well, with that the political dynamics, he's probably going to win the Republican primary.
Yes.
And that's what he has to do right now.
A fundraising email went out, actually, from his campaign while he was in court today. So they are leaning into this hard. It almost felt like a campaign event when he stopped at a local restaurant in Florida following the court proceeding.
Yeah.
And it's clear that they see or at least want to take advantage of the political upsides to this.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're looking at the law, the politics, and the moment of the arrest and arraignment of former President Donald Trump. Let's go to Ken calling from D.C. Ken, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I appreciate it. Thank you for your time, as always. It's ironic because the conversation essentially also surrounds money. That the first thing he does after he leaves court is he goes and he gets fundraisers. And he's a self-proclaimed billionaire, which is just the continued conscious lie of who he is. But this man has been involved in over 4,000 lawsuits against him and his companies and his holdings over time. He is literally a serial predator when it comes to lying and being dishonest. But he needs a certain base to do it. And they believe it. So I gather it works. But is this not a fact? Can he not, of course, be criminally charged and convicted and actually be serving time and be present? But can't he also pardon himself as well while he's in the presence?
Attorney Lightfoot, I'm going to let you, take a stab at that. That is one of the ever-present questions. I mean, we know that, for example, if I rob a 7-Eleven and I am convicted of doing that, I lose my rights to vote. Although there are some states in this country where after finishing your sentence, your rights are restored. But in this particular case, to piggyback off of what Ken is saying, if Donald Trump is convicted of a crime, would he first of all be able to run, and if he were to, and if that were allowed, if he were to win, would he be able to pardon himself? I'll let you tackle that on the other side. Eva also has some thoughts about that. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the law, the politics, and the moment as it relates to the arrest and arraignment of former President Donald Trump. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll continue this conversation on Sirius XM in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we're looking at the law, the politics, and the historic moment of the arrest and arraignment of former President Donald Trump. My guests are Eva McKend, national politics reporter for CNN, Reynard Jackson, political analyst and Republican strategist, and attorney William Lightfoot. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Right before the break, Ken was asking about the what ifs. If former President Trump were convicted, could he still run? If he becomes president, could he pardon himself? Attorney Lightfoot, I'll let you jump in first.
Thank you. This certainly is historic, and because it is historic, there are many unanswered questions. And constitutional scholars are analyzing this question right now. Can Trump pardon himself if he becomes president? Well, he may be able to pardon himself for any of the federal crimes, such as the one he's been charged with right now in Miami, which is withholding the secret documents. However, if it's a state crime, so that one he could probably pardon himself for, perhaps. With respect to a state crime, like he's being charged in Georgia for interfering with the election there, he probably cannot pardon himself. The president only has authority to pardon himself for those that are pardon people for federal crimes, not state crimes. So I say all that to say that, and if he's convicted, by the way, the conviction probably will not stop him running for president because all the appeals and all the conviction process will probably not have concluded before the next presidential election.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that he is going to go the distance, and his legal team has every incentive to try to drag this out as long as possible. What we have seen, though, on the campaign trail, I was recently in Iowa for the Faith and Freedom Coalition speaking to evangelical, mostly white conservative voters there. And some of them have real concerns about the former president winning a general election.
Why? Why is that?
They like him. They support him. They're really happy with the makeup of the Supreme Court. But they do not think that he can win in a general election. And so you see some of them saying, well, maybe we should consider Senator Scott or Vivek Ramaswamy or former Vice President Mike Pence. That isn't really reflected in the polling right now. You see Trump way, way ahead of the rest of the pack. But when you actually go to these states and speak to voters, there does seem to be some Republicans that are open to changing their minds here. And I do wonder if there is yet another indictment in Georgia, for instance, is he going to see an erosion of support?
Are they concerned about the baggage because of other voters? I mean, are they supporting him, but they are concerned that others that may not necessarily have their same political leanings would not support him?
Right. And I think that Chris Christie spoke to this week in the CNN town hall that where Trump had issues was with independents. And in these early states, they take their first in the nation status really seriously. And some of these voters are pretty savvy. So they're not only thinking about who they want to see in the White House, but they're thinking about winning the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I'm hearing, that there is concern about, okay, well, if he wins the primary, is he, especially if he faces, further potential charges, is he going to be able to compete in a general election? Will he lose to Biden again, especially with suburban women and independent voters?
Which, you know, Reynard, that kind of flies in the face of what you were saying before. These are outside the Beltway voters, as Eva was talking about. These are, you know, Republican voters. These are, you know, part of the base. And suffice it to say, no matter what you think about President Trump, whether you like him, you love him, or you're somewhere in between, he is sucking all of the air out of the room when it comes to whether it's the top of a newscast, whether it is you know, online newspapers, because nobody's reading the paper anymore. But you know, and you know, he is, even when you talk to the Republican candidates before they talk about their individual candidacy, they're talking about Donald Trump. So I think, Reynard, that people are paying attention outside the Beltway more than you suggested earlier.
No, I disagree. Number one, I don't believe in polls. Never have, never will. All the campaigns I work, I don't deal with polls. I deal with people, because these polls have been inaccurate for the past 3 or 4 or 5 cycles. And I don't know why media folks keep leaning on these polls when every year and every cycle they're wrong, number one. Number two, the more legal jeopardy Trump is exposed to, the stronger he gets. He's like that Godzilla movie. When he touches those power lines, it will kill the average person. But when he touches it, he gets stronger and stronger. And the reason why, and this is why I keep going back to the outside the Beltway people, Harold, is average people, you and I and Eva and Bill, we keep up with politics for a living. We eat, sleep, and breathe this stuff. The average voter keeps up with things on tangential matters and just goes to work trying to survive every day. And what they see when they look at Trump, they see someone where the whole system seems to be set out to destroy this guy. That's why he can remain strong. That's why he sucks up all the oxygen. And he is a existential threat to the status quo. That's why he's the most dangerous person, not only in the U.S., but in the world, because he's disrupting the global elite's agenda. That's why they were so sure Hillary would win in 2016. And when Trump got in, he destroyed their whole game plan. And this is now their second attempt to remove him from the playing field so they can get an establishment figure. And the final thing, Harold, Joe Biden will not be the Democratic nominee.
Why do you say that? Who's going to challenge Joe Biden?
Gavin Newsom. He's doing everything a presidential candidate would do, and he's just waiting for the right stumble by President Biden. Gavin Newsom will be running. Joe Biden will not be there. And plus, he's got all these legal issues on the Burisma, the Ukrainian stuff. That is real, Harold. I'm telling you, it is real. And the establishment, the Justice Department, they have weaponized all their power to protect Joe Biden. Not the rank and file, Harold and Eva and Bill. I'm talking about the political appointees over the past 2 or 3 administrations have prostituted their legal authority, and they're going after people like Trump. And so they are going to be forced by the Republican majority in the House to actually investigate and Biden, and it's going to be a smoking gun at the end of the day.
Well, some would argue that the existential threat are those dozens and dozens of boxes that we saw at Mar-a-Lago as it relates to national security. But certainly that is a debate that we are going to continue to have, no doubt. Let me go to Sam calling from Waldorf. Sam, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Harold. As a security manager, I mean, some of the things I hear about Trump not doing anything wrong, it gives me a headache. As a security manager, my job is to protect classified material. Every person that gets their clearance before they are briefed on any material have to sign an NDA, 4414. And that 4414 specifically says on the Title 18 that you can go to jail or you can be fined for improperly removing, transmitting, or improperly safeguarding material. Now, you're telling me those boxes that was in the bathroom wasn't part of the removing, improperly safeguarding, or transferring material. That right there is a penalty anyway. One document gets you in trouble. One document gets you in trouble.
Sam, thank you so much for that.
And to Sam's point, the kicker in all of this is that Trump was not charged with mishandling any of the 197 classified documents that he returned to the National Archives in early 2022. So that indicates if he would have cooperated, if he would have handed over all of the documents as the archives initially sought, maybe we wouldn't even be having this conversation.
One could argue that that is the reason why we're not seeing any legal issues for Mike Pence when you know initially and we remember clear as day when this first came up and he was asked by the anchor on ABC News, do you have any documents? And he said no, but then he looked and he made a phone call and he said, I have documents, come get them. Come get them. Like now, don't wait until 8:59, federal government business. No, come get them now. And that is why, he is politically in a position where he can say, mistakes notwithstanding, this is what former President Donald Trump has done is beyond the pale.
Right. The former president did not raise his hand and say, here I am, here are the boxes, here's everything I got. It was the archives that went to him in 2021 when they realized that certain classified materials were missing.
Yeah.
But that's amazing.
Hold on. Go ahead. Go ahead, Bill.
Right. That's a major distinction that you've just made accurately between what Trump did and Pence and Biden and even Hillary Clinton. Remember, Clinton was investigated, and they determined that she did not intentionally keep or move any classified documents. But going back to Trump, if Trump can convince a jury that he did not intentionally, maliciously hide or keep these documents, and he had a good purpose in having these documents, he might have a defense that will persuade people on a jury not to convict him.
Reynard, you were going to say.
Yeah, a couple things. Number one, intent has no bearing on with Hillary Clinton. Jim Comey unilaterally came out and said that no prosecutor would prosecute this case because the intent was out there. Number one, a FBI director never does what he did. That was the role of Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, should have made any statement, not the FBI director. So intent is of no consequence when you're dealing with classified documents. And you all just proved my point that this is a political issue with Trump, not legal, even though it's dressed up as a legal infraction. This is all about the Justice Department being weaponized to go after Trump and people like Trump. And they could have gone after Mike Pence, no question about it. They could have gone after Biden from his Senate vice presidential day. Prosecutors used prosecutorial discretion on all these other people, but with Trump, they got it out for him, and that's why the average American person understands this is a political witch hunt dressed up as a legal issue.
But hold on, Reynard, because, okay, let's just take what you just said about the Attorney General then. You could make that same argument about Attorney General William Barr and the Russia investigation when he came out back in 2019 and kind of threw the investigation under the bus with that press conference that he held when Special Counsel Robert Mueller had concluded his investigation. So, it seems like there's there are problems on both sides when it comes to past attorney generals.
My big question is, why didn't he just turn over all of the documents when initially asked? to the archives in 2021. Why were they allegedly moved? Why were all this choreography?
Yeah, the machinations of all of that.
It's just not clear. And as much as he talks about how all of these agencies are being weaponized, and this is going to become a central campaign issue for them, right? For him. He has already indicated that his argument is going to be, look at what they're doing to me. This is what they're really doing to you. And some of his supporters will find that message attractive. But as I said before, others have real concerns about his political viability in a general matchup. But the question that has not been answered is why? Why didn't you just turn over all the boxes to the archives, case closed, when they asked for them in 2021?
Bill,
but that's not relevant.
I think that really is, because while at least right now, in the indictment, there is no suggestion as to what he may or may not have wanted to do with it. But, you know, Bill, you know, you're an attorney. You know how these things go. I don't think that the special counsel is showing his entire hand in this legal battle.
Well, yes, he hasn't yet. Let me address this question of why Trump did it, because I think it is a major question, okay? He could have avoided all this just by turning the documents back in. He deliberately kept them. Why would he do that? Let's give this man credit for who he is, and I know there'll be some that disagree with me on this, but look, my mind, this guy's an evil genius, and he figured it out. If he forces the Justice Department to come after him, it gives him something to incite his supporters. He can do exactly what he's doing now. One, raise money. Two, claim grievances. Three, he's a victim. All right, it plays into the broader Republican strategy of how to keep their base energized. I'm reading a book right now on the Ku Klux Klan and their plot to take over America. Excellent book. Recommend you read it. One of the things they stressed about the KKK, they had an overall strategy and plan. They played to the grievances of many white people who believed that the immigrants were too many, there was a culture war on black culture and black people, just like there is now. They were against Jews and gays. Much of this continues today, and Trump has put himself in a position to incite that very type of emotion. I think it was planned. He knew what he was doing when he forced the hand of the Department of Justice.
Who risked dozens of years in federal prison, though, for this type of political gamesmanship?
Well, I would argue to that point.
Yeah, he's not going to prison at his age and the past president. They're not going to lock him up like that.
But to your point, Eva, I think you could have asked that question in 2014 of any national political person, and I would have said, yeah, who does that? But we have not seen the likes of a Donald Trump on the national political stage. We have not seen the likes of him in the White House beforehand. And so the common sense of your question does not make sense, because the answer is Donald Trump risks that. Donald Trump is the one who says grab him by the Donald Trump mm-hmm. is Donald Trump is the one who threw the FAA and indeed the entire passenger jet community into turmoil by trying to ban Muslims from who does that?
That's right. Only Trump.
Yeah, he has done that. And so I think that is the answer. There is the risk. If you have gotten away with things before of not paying your attorneys or not paying the people who build your hotels and resorts and all of these other things, risk is pro forma
for him. You think you can get away with anything? I mean, it's called hubris. And historically, many great people have fallen and then been defeated because of hubris. They get away with so much, they think they can get away with anything. Trump, I think, planned this.
I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about Walt Nauta, because the judge today, Eva, said that there is no, there needs to be no communication between, you know, the former president and his co-defendant, but, you know, this is the only job he has. And so the question is, so what does he do now? We saw him on video earlier today after the arraignment. Nada was still there at that restaurant. Now you can't talk to your boss. How does that work?
Yeah, he continues to be right by his side. They are not supposed to talk about the case. I don't know how that will work since they seem to spend a lot of time together. I will note, though, that Nada's, it seems like from the outset, is being treated differently by the justice system than former President Trump. He had to have a mugshot taken today. And because he did not have local representation from Florida, he has to come back later this month to actually deal with his case.
And the former president is still, you know, trying to find his own Florida attorney.
Yes, he is trying to build out his state representation there. And we have heard that some lawyers are reticent to take this case on.
Reticent. I like that word. That's what we that is certainly.
They're afraid they won't be paid.
Yeah, well, you know, that and I, you know, Renard, look, again, no matter what you think of the former president or, you know, or any defendant, you know, lawyers have to make money. And if someone has a reputation for not paying, I would be reticent also not to take on the gig.
Well, I don't think Trump is going to have a problem with that, because not only these guys are going to get paid up front, but number two, just think of all the exposure they get for that law practice. So that's also a calculation as well. So I don't think he's going to have a problem getting in touch with some of the best attorneys money can rent down there in Miami or D.C. So that's an issue I'm not concerned about. But again, I hope you all understand why I keep harping on this issue of a duality in our justice system. Why does Sandy Berger, Bill Clinton's national security advisor, he put some top secret document in his pants, walked out of the National Archive, and got convicted of a misdemeanor? Why did Jim Comey admit it on the record that he leaked confidential information to a law friend of his, a professor, and they leaked it in turn to the New York Times? So again, it's obvious there's a double standard and to our justice system based on whether they like you or not. And this is all the other legal stuff we're talking about, Harold, Eva, and Bill, to me, that's background noise. The noise, I mean, the substance is the American people can see the inequity in our justice system, and that's what the average voter is going to focus on.
I think there is a conversation to be had about the dual system of justice in this country, the sentencing disparities when it comes to Black Americans, the way in which you are severely disadvantaged if you can't afford the best representation, the sort of the hidden tax on poor people when you get arrested or somehow entangled in the justice system. I'm not so sure that Trump is the best vehicle, though, to talk about the dual system of justice. This is someone who has arguably had every advantage to avoid any type of criminal liability. Even his own supporters. Senator, South Carolina Senior Senator Lindsey Graham is characterizing this as sort of a self-inflicted problem. So I don't know about that argument, Renard.
Well, I agree. Trump is his own worst enemy. In most cases, he's his own worst enemy.
Let me stop you there, Renard. Why do you say that? Why do you say that Donald Trump is his own worst enemy?
Because remember, Donald Trump growing up in a entrepreneurial family, his father, and he took over the business from his father. All of Trump's adult life, he had people doing what he told them to do. And as president, people did what you tell them to do. Now the justice system is saying, oh, not so fast, young man. You got to do it the way we want to do it. And Trump has said, the heck with you. And so Trump is not used to being challenged at the level that he's been challenged on. And so he digs in his heels, and I think his ego gets the best of him.
But, and that may be a great argument. The only problem with that is it's just like, the speed limit is 55. and if you decide, if you've been driving 70 since you got your driver's license at 16 and you've never been caught, but now you're caught, well, but you know, you always knew that the speed limit was 55, even though you wanted to drive however the heck you wanted to drive. And I think that's really kind of a poor excuse, saying that, yeah, you grew up skirting the law, but you knew better, and you also had people to do your bidding because you escaped the long arm of the law. And so I would think that if you are your own worst enemy, why didn't he get the message? Or maybe this is the message, Raynard.
But Harold, you come from nowhere.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
First time running for any office, and you choose to run for president, not Congress, not city council, not U.S. Senate, but president, and then you win?
But the Constitution says you can do that.
Yeah, but my point is, Harold, you go from the corporate community where your word is golden. When you say hi, you say, hi, Mr. Trump. Then you get into the political arena, and the House and the Senate say, oh, not so fast. You don't run out here. The Justice Department says, no, we got certain rules and regulations even a sitting president has to follow, and you think you're above that? That's what I mean by his ego getting in the way.
Let me tell you, if you or I were confronted by the National Archives and they told you to turn over documents, mm-hmm. we would be turning them over.
Yeah, absolutely.
No question.
And my bathroom would not hold those documents. Let me just say. Yeah, go right ahead, Bill.
Yeah, and let's look at something for a minute. When you say Trump is his own worst enemy, what he has done has been very successful. He did win an election in 2016 that nobody thought he could win. All right, out of the question. He was president for 4 years, and now and while doing those 4 years, was impeached by the Congress
twice.
Many people consider this guy a crook, and yet here he is, the leading candidate for the Republican Party. Candidate nomination for president. So whatever he's been doing has been successful. These are not failures that have brought him down. And one thing about criminals, they have a saying. And the saying is, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime. Well, in this case, it's very unlikely that Trump's going to do any time over anything that he's done, or anything he's being charged with. And we know that whenever he has been charged with any of this, it inures to his political benefit. This was not just coincidence. So I don't agree that Trump has been his own worst enemy. No, he has masterminded this. He's masterminded the 2016 election. He's masterminding this right now to take the lead in Republican primary. And he's got his opponents right where he wants them. They are supporting him in his fight against the U.S. government.
Bill, let me ask you this in this last minute, and I'll let you have the last word. Something just struck me. People said that the COVID-19 pandemic was revealing about a lot of things in this country that were simmering just beneath the surface. What would you say the Trump era from 2015 up until what we saw today has revealed about the politics in this country?
Well, I'll say this. I really do believe there's an analogous situation between what we see today and what the KKK was doing back in the 1920s and the 1930s. Now, having said that, Trump has fed some of this resentment and anger and violence in the country, violence against, you know, Asian people, black people, gay people. That's been one of his products. But I will give the guy credit on this. The man spent all that damn money, and he helped us lick COVID. You know, as crazy as he was and as crazy as it sounded, it worked for him. But having said all of that, Trump has set in motion certain forces in our country that we were able to contain for quite a few decades. And now we're going to have to face them.
Yeah.
And it's going to be ugly.
This has been an interesting conversation, no doubt. And certainly this will not be the last conversation as we look at this historic moment, the politics of the legal wranglings in all of this. And let me just say, just as a personal point of privilege, Eva McKend, we are proud of you.
Thank you.
Looking good on CNN. I was a fan before you're there, but can I get an autograph?
Well, just thank you for having me back.
Always. You're always welcome. Eva McKend, Raynard Jackson, William Lightfoot, thank you all for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, June 13th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.